Playoff time in the NBA and NHL. Baseball's in full swing, and FanDuel is your place to bet on every game. Right now, new customers get $150 in bonus bets guaranteed. That's $150, win or lose. Bet on everything from slap shots to home runs to slam dunks on an app that's safe, secure, and easy to use. What are you waiting for? Visit FanDuel.com/Fred and make your first bet an automatic win. FanDuel, America's number one sports book.
21 plus and present in Massachusetts. First online real money wager only. $10 first deposit required. Bonus issued is non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire 7 days after receipt. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Hope is here. Gambling helpline ma.org or call 800-327-5050 for 24/7 support. Play it smart from the start. GameSenseMA.com or call 1-800-GAM-1234.
B-Pod Studios.
Gasper and Murray have scorching hot takes. Twisting your mind with Pat Celtics and Bays. They'll also talk Sox and out-of-town fame. Just call them up on this Saturday. Gasper
and Murray.
Gasper
and Murray.
Just call them up on this Saturday. Gasper
and Murray.
Gasper
and Murray.
He looks cool, but man, that heart has to be racing. Second free throw, no good. Tatum sneaks in, grabs the rebound.
Oh, huge.
And he got fouled.
Yes.
All right, thank God for that play, because when Grant Williams was going to the line, I don't know how you felt, Chris. It's Gasper Murray from the Sound Pier Tire Studio. Good morning, 98.5 Sports Hub. I had zero confidence, less than zero confidence, that he was going to hit either of them, let alone one. There was no shot Grant Williams was going to make those free throws. With the way that that night was going for the Celtics at the line, what were they? They ended up 13-23, I think that it was, bricking threes all night long. Defense was great, and hats off to Marcus Smart and obviously to Jason Tatum for his night and for getting that rebound and saving their asses. Because I had zero confidence Grant Williams was going to hit those shots. But Jason Tatum saves the day. Celtics hang on, 92-87. They win Game 7 of the Toronto Raptors in a round to take on the Miami Heat. But at that moment, I was like, oh, God, no, this is really good. This is how this is going to end, huh? I had my mental breakdown tweet ready to be sent. I actually had it in the chamber. All I had to do was hit send. And then thank God for Jason Tatum getting that rebound and saving their asses. I didn't think it was that great of a night overall. I think for either team, it was kind of a rock fight. I guess I should have expected that. But, the bottom line is thank God that they won. And they're on to take on the Miami Heat. But this thing shouldn't even have gone this far in the first place.
No, it shouldn't have. But I have to say, like, I thought it was an eminently enjoyable series and game. I think you had two teams that pushed each other to the limit. I thought afterwards that the Raptors showed a lot of class in talking about the Celtics. And vice versa with Jason Tatum talking about Toronto and how, you know, they're a tough team. They made us earn it. On the other side, you had Kyle Lowry saying, you know, they won fair and square. That's a good team over there. So obviously a healthy respect. And I thought it was a coming of age victory, not just in the series, but game seven as well for the Celtics. I think ultimately they needed to win a series like this. They needed to win a game like this with this core to ultimately get to where they want to go. And you heard Tatum sort of say after the game that, you know, they made us earn it. And I think the Celtics needed to sort of earn something like this against a team like Toronto to forge and to be able to start to develop that DNA that you need as a team to be able to be a true championship contender. So, yeah, aesthetically, was it the most beautiful basketball I've ever watched? No, but it was really compelling. And I feel like I learned a lot more about the Celtics in this victory than if they had gone on to blow Toronto out, which is what I thought was going to happen when they built the 12-point lead.
Same.
Early yeah. on. I was like, oh, and you could tell they kind of thought that too.
Yeah.
They sort of relaxed a little, like, oh, this team doesn't have the firepower. They're tired. They've exhausted all their energy just to push us to seven. Okay, we just gave them the uppercut. Now they're not going to get up off the mat. And Toronto really did, and they pushed the Celtics.
Yeah, I got to give Toronto more credit than I thought. I thought that they were a good team, but after they were down 0-2, they had the fluky Game 3 win, Celtics no-show on Saturday night. In Game 5, I thought the Celtics played their best game of the series, and I expected them to fully close them out in Game 6. They didn't. But I didn't take them as seriously, I guess, as I should have. You know, look, I know that they won the championship last year, but so much of that had to do with the fact that I think that they have the best player in the league, or had the best player in the league, in Kawhi Leonard. But no, there's some damn good players there, and same, and Kyle Lowry might be the guy that I didn't take as seriously as I should have. That dude's got stones. And look, as ugly,
he's like a better Marcus Smart. He literally is what Celtics fans think Smart is. And I'm not, you know, obviously Smart made the play of the series. But I think, let me rephrase it. Offensively, when you, like, total package offense, defense, he is what Celtics fans think Smart is. Smart is an elite defender who can give you sporadic offense. Lowry is an all-star point guard who's sort of like a 1A on a championship team.
Yeah, but more than anything else, I'm glad that they showed that the Celtics, that they have the intestinal fortitude to close this thing up. Because I did start to question that. You referred to them as front runners yesterday in your appearance on Felger and Maz, and I started to worry about that too, Chris, because, you know, given the, you know, the youth factor and Jason Tatum only being 22 and the fact that, you know, the way that they played at times in this series, it's like they wanted it the easy way. And if it wasn't going to be them blowing them out, then if it got tight, they got tight. And I thought that they were tight to start last night's game, too. It was concerning, at least in that first half. It's like, oh, God, they're really, really tight, especially guys like Jaylen Brown. And I didn't think it was a particularly great night for Kemba Walker either. In fact, games 6 and 7 weren't great. And even if you just to look at this on the stat sheet, again, look at the free throws, 13 out of 23 for the night on the, for the Celtics, that they don't even score a bucket with 5 and change remaining in regulation. Like it's crazy that they were actually able to win this thing. But how did they win it? Well, it's winning plays by guys like Marcus Smart, and it was great defense, which I thought was up and down throughout the whole totality of the series. But at least last night, it's what you would expect, especially on the perimeter.
Well, I thought they turned the tide earlier in the game. You know, they're down in the second quarter, and I thought they turned the tide with their defense. They started to smother Toronto. Toronto got a little loose with the basketball. I thought Marcus Smart, as much as that block, I mean, that block, obviously a huge play. I mean, that is a LeBron James-like block by Marcus Smart. There are not enough superlatives to describe that block and how huge it was. But I would argue that maybe just as big was his ability to turn the tide of this game in the second quarter when it wasn't going the Celtics' way, when he's out there, you know, getting steals and taking charges and turning that tide. I think in the second quarter, when it seemed like Toronto had gotten pretty comfortable, you know, they had built a nice little lead for themselves. They were up 7 and, you know, Smart gets a steal there, and then he goes and he takes an offensive foul. He draws a charge and he hits a driving floating bank shot. I just thought that he really changed the momentum of the game in that second quarter. And that was huge because I think Toronto was feeling pretty good about themselves and feeling really confident. And then the Celtics turned up the defense led by Marcus Smart. And it was a challenge, I thought, for Toronto the rest of the way to just get into their offense. You know, they just seemed very frazzled. And I think the Celtics defense and Marcus Smart had a ton to do with that.
Well, it's a day to celebrate and be pumped because the Celtics rightfully closed out this team. They were better. They had more talent. You know, again, I do feel a little irked that it went this far. But credit to Toronto. But they were on to take on the Miami Heat in the Eastern Conference Finals. And with happiness, well, a bit scarce these days, but with the crazy time we're living in, we want to hear from you. You should be rightfully pumped about this team moving on. 617-779-0985. Just quickly on the Heat, am I wrong to not be taking them as seriously as others are?
I think so. I think you're wrong in that. I mean, they're a very well-coached team. They play hard. And those are two of the advantages the Celtics have during the regular season. You know, you always talked about the Bridgies, and to me, the reason the Bridgies were not able to go as far as maybe people anticipated in the playoffs was because their two biggest advantages were negated from regular season to playoffs. One, coaching, because you get into the playoffs, and a lot of times Brad is basically crossed out by another good coach, a Budenholzer, and effort. It's like, well, it's the playoffs. Now everybody's playing hard. And Miami plays just as hard as the Celtics. They're just as well coached. I think Jay Crowder and Olynyk maybe have something to prove. Butler's a hard-nosed star. The thing I would say that separates Miami from Toronto is that I think they have more consistent outside shooting. And
well, they were second in the league, right, to shooting threes this season?
Yeah, they can. I mean, Duncan Robinson, New England guy, Tyler Hero. I mean, to me, that's one of the most fascinating parts of the series, just seeing how Tyler Hero plays, knowing the Celtics wanted him. They thought they had him one pick before Miami takes him. Yeah. Ryle's stepping in to screw the Celtics once again.
Yeah, I guess maybe it's just a me thing, and a lot of it has to do with the Crowder and Olynyk factor. It's like, I see those guys, and it's like, oh, I had to watch you and have it shoved down my throat for a few years. And, oh, these guys are great, and we're not taking them seriously enough here on Felger and Maz. You guys aren't giving them credit. Well, stop calling them the Bridgies. They're hacks. They're hacks. I know it's bombs away with that team, and they're a damn good three-point shooting team. And they're well-coached. Look, I actually think that Spoelstra has been wildly underrated, and it wasn't more about LeBron. Well, look, it's LeBron, but he was a factor, too, during those championship runs with the Heat. It's a good team, but I don't know. Your ceiling's only so high with a team like that. I don't think Jimmy Butler's all that great. I think he's superstar, small S. Ish. Like, I don't know. I think the Celtics have more talent.
And they do.
It's a talent-driven league, and talent ultimately wins out on that league. And now that they've got over Toronto, they showed me something last night in terms of guts and guile and all those little cliches. They're able to get over the hump, win Game 7. I'm spitefully saying Celtics in 5 because Felger and Maz think that this Heat team is going to be a war. I think Maz is picking the Heat, and it's like, oh, just stop it.
I'll say a couple things. One, I think it really helps the Celtics that it appears like they're going to get Gordon Hayward back. I don't know how early in the series, but I think that lengthens the rotation.
Well, the last couple of nights he's been shooting around before these games have started, which is a good sign.
Yeah, I think that's really good that, you know, we'll see what he can do. But even if he just sort of facilitates and stands in the corner and shoots threes, if that's all he can do due to the ankle, I mean, it was a grade 3 ankle sprain. I'm a little surprised he's going to make it back this quickly. But just having another guy that can knock down shots will help. The person who concerns me the most on the Heat in this series is Bam Adebayo. Celtics, you know, not only in the bubble, but particularly in the bubble, I think have struggled with bigs who are talented and bigs who can stretch the floor. You know, we've seen that go back to some of those like seeding games and the preseason games when you're looking like a guy like Steven Adams, you know, going nuts on you.
Well, just
in Nurkic.
Look, it was a terrible series, and we'll get into this because I know it's something that you want to talk at length about, is how bad Pascal Siakam
was in this series. Yeah, Celtics fans, you got to wake up. That guy was your MVP. Like, I know you all love Marcus Smart, but when the other team's best player averaged 23 a game, sets a record by shooting. He shot 4 of 32 from 3. That's 12.5%. ESPN had this stat. That is a record, minimum 30 attempts for the worst three-point percentage in a playoff series in NBA history.
But last night, at times, at least in the first half, he looked decent in terms of on the glass and some defense, I thought. And there was one particular play where it was literally all five players trying to surround Siakam, rather, and he gets the rebound. And so that, to me, like, red flag going into the series, because I think same thing. Like, Adebayo is a player that you got to be concerned about. So that's one red flag. And another is, again, this how Kemba Walker's looked in Game 6 and 7. And I start to wonder, it's like, okay, is the knee thing starting to pop up again? Because he doesn't look like the same guy that we saw at least in the first round series or even the first couple of games of this series.
It's a great point, Jim, and not enough people are talking about that. And everybody's saying, oh, box and one.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know if it was just the box and one. And he got off to a horrendous start last night. He really struggled. And when I watch him play, you know, what I see is that it doesn't feel like he feels like he can get all the way to the rim and finish. It feels like he's trying to get about halfway, then stop and hit that little pull-up jumper in the lane. And it seems like he just doesn't have the explosion. So I don't know what's going on there. They need him. I mean, he's obviously a guy that they need in this series, and they need him to sort of win that, you know, point guard matchup with Dragic and those guys with the Heat. That is a little concerning that he's not fully 100%, or he doesn't look as explosive. So we'll see how that goes. But another thing I'd say, just based off this Toronto series, I think if you didn't think this before, like I'm still hearing analysts say, well, the Celtics go as Kemba goes. And even Barkley and those guys last night from TNT, you know, this team's going to go as far as Kemba takes them. It's like, no, this is Jason Tatum's team. And I think that was established in this series and in Game 7. He kept them in Game 7 early when guys looked tight and didn't look like they knew what they were doing. When Brown and Smart were bricking threes, it was Jason Tatum who was keeping them in the game. So this is Tatum's team. So I'd say one thing that's good about the situation with Kemba is that obviously it's not good that he's hurt, but the idea that he's your best player, I think we can throw that away. It's Jason Tatum. the Celtics will go as Tatum goes.
Absolutely. He is their best player, and I like that he kind of took over at times last night. That one particular layup he had with the left hand, and then he's holding up that left hand like, my magic left hand. I need to protect it and keep it in a Crown Royal bag full of Vaseline to keep it soft for my women. Like that, I was like, all right, I kind of like to see that kind of confidence. Yes, that's a Steinbeck reference here on a sports show. You don't get that much anywhere else. That's why we're Gaspar Murray. We want to hear from you on last night's game. 617-779-0985. We'll get right to you and your thoughts on the Celtics Game 7 win next.
Gaspar and Murray, 98.5, the Sports Hub. Prime Rib is back for this. This is Gaspar and Murray.
You will listen.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
Yeah, I mean, he just has a great feel for the game, and he's seeing a lot of different coverages. You know, in this series, he saw everything you could possibly see. So he's done a great job handling it. I thought the two plays of the night were Smart's block and Tatum's rebound. Those were both incredible effort plays, you know, by two of our best players. So we're lucky to move on, you know, against a really special Toronto team and organization. But yeah, Tatum's really good. Does a lot of really good things.
Celtics head coach Brad Stevens on Jason Tatum. Good night for him. Game 7, putting up 29 points, 12 rebounds, 7 assists. I think his passing isn't talked about enough, Chris. Some of the no-look passes, there's one that he set up. There was a no-look pass to Marcus Smart last night on a three that Smart ended up hitting. Like, when he's on with his passing, it's as smooth as you're going to see in the NBA. I don't think that that's me just being a Bobo and a fan of Tatum and the Celtics. I just think that might be one of the underrated parts of Jason Tatum's game as we watch him blossom game by game.
Yeah, it's funny you say that, and I don't know if you remember this, but I mentioned this like earlier in the season.
Yeah,
I talked about his pass, and we had a caller who was like, what are you talking about? Look at his assist numbers. It's like, no, you got to watch the games.
And the numbers might not be that high, but, you know, again, it's an eye test thing.
It's the plays he's making that he would not have made his first couple of years.
For
in
sure.
The league. No question about it. I think that might be his single biggest area of improvement. He's seeing the plays now. He's become an adept and deadly passer, you know, 7 assists in this game, 9 assists, career high for any game in game 6. You're absolutely right. And you could see this, you know, if you're paying attention and you know the game and you watch during the regular season, you could see this developing, that he was getting more comfortable as a passer. He was becoming more proficient as a passer. And it just makes him a better all-around player, and it makes the Celtics even more deadly. And I think he's sort of gotten away from the like Kobe, Carmelo Anthony, once I have the ball, I'm tunnel vision beating my guy going to the hoop. Now he's seeing the game on a much, it's like, you know, what was that year of Madden where they had the like,
oh, the cone?
The cone.
I think it was 05.
You know, and it's like,
I hated vision cone.
It depended on like, you know, who you were playing with. Like Peyton Manning could literally see into the concession stand, like in the second, you know, in the second deck.
Kyle Orton was just like a thin little toothpick.
Yeah. I mean, Kyle Orton basically, like, all he could see was the center to take the snap. It's kind of like that. The field of vision for Tatum and the way he processes the game, it's just opened up so much.
Celtics 92, Raptors 87. They win game 7, go on to the Eastern Conference Finals against Miami. Want to hear from you early and often. Larry in Duxbury, you're first up here this morning on Gaspar Murray.
Hi, guys.
Hi.
Hey.
Well, on Tatum on the assist, I think it's the confidence, and I also think he understands, like, the magic principle about assists can be more important, and they're coming at crucial points. So I agree completely. I think his evolution is reflected more in that than anything. All the good things. The thing that had me concerned the most was the points they gave up in the paint that were easy, especially in the second half. From the foul line in, there seems to have been too much cutting in. There weren't the calls for charging. But I have that concern against Miami about them giving up too many points in the paint. Thanks. Great show, guys.
Thanks, Larry.
Thank
so
you.
We see Robert Williams playing as real minutes as you're going to get last night. And some of that had to do with the fact that Daniel Tice was in foul trouble. Fine. But I thought Williams was okay. So do you think we ultimately see more of him on both ends, especially trying to, you know, protect the paint against Miami and a player like Bam Adebayo in this next round?
Yeah, you could. I mean, it seems like obviously some confidence in Robert Williams. You could use the length. You know, the problem with Robert Williams, and B-Rob can speak to this probably greater than I can, is that when he gets put in the pick and roll, he sort of gets put in the blender and he gets lost. And that's really an issue. And I'm sure that Spoelstra and the Heat will try and take advantage of that. I mean, he has the length. He has the size. You see what he can do, contest shots. He had like a putback dunk.
Yeah, he cleans up nice.
Yeah, absolutely. You like the energy. the athleticism. He gives them a sort of a different look at center.
But man, when he gets caught in that pick and roll,
yeah, it's
how many
not,
times you yell at your TV like, "No, over there!" Like,
yeah,
it's out on an island.
It looks like he's doing like one of those Where's Waldo things. Yeah. You know, he's struggling to find Waldo. It's painful. So you know, I don't know. I sort of look at it and think you'll see him, but because of the length, but I don't know how he'll fare once Miami puts him in actions, and they're going to put him in a lot of actions to test his sort of mental acuity, you know?
Brian and Woburn, you're next on Gaspar Murray on last night's game. Hey, Brian.
Hey, what's up, guys? The thing that drove me, I think, the most crazy in the whole series is Kyle Lowry. I mean, you were talking about him earlier and comparing him to Marcus Smart to him, which I think is a great comparison. It's just, I feel like Smart has, like, the cojones where he's going to take a hit and get up and shake it off, where Lowry, I feel like, all series, all he did, he got hit, like, incidental contact, it was nothing, and he gets up and he's throwing his elbow up in the air like he got a hockey stick to the face. I mean, it was driving me nuts the whole series. But there was so much good stuff, except for the foul line. I mean, I feel like they could have blown them out last night if they could hit some shots, but they were just miserable. And that's all I got.
All right, Brian, thanks. Yeah, there was a tightness thing going on there at the line, especially with guys like Kemba Walker. Like, and that makes me wonder. It's like, is something going on with the knee? Like, is he hurting there? Because he's one of the best free throw shooters in the NBA, Chris. Like, that just felt like, what is this? Is it tightness? Something wrong? Like, they really could have lost that game because of how bad they were at the line.
13-23. Yeah, 56.5%. I mean, that's really bad. Yeah, you're right. And I was surprised at some of the guys who missed free throws down the stretch like Kemba. You know, I wasn't surprised by Grant Williams. I thought he played well. I mean, he had a great defensive stop there on Van Vliet.
Chris, there was no shot he was going to make.
Oh, he had the Schiraldi eyes. I mean, he looked like Calvin Schiraldi. And the other thing, I don't know. B-Rob might know. Everybody has a different routine at the free throw line. But he felt sped up to me. He was like, give me the ball. He's like, I just want to get this out of my hands. Like, both shots. Like when he missed the first one, I thought he might walk away from the line, take his time. He just took it, like, dribbled twice and, like, threw it at the rim. He's like, I don't want this anymore. I don't want this.
It's me on a par three. When I tee off on a par three, just get it and rip it. Don't want to think about it too much because it's going in the woods.
Yeah. Like, yeah. But, yeah, look, he made a big defensive stop, though, on the other end on Van Vliet that was really key, especially with Tice fouled out. So, just the Marcus Smart, Kyle Lowry thing, there's no difference. The only difference, it's the laundry. So the way that caller felt about Lowry, that's how every other team in the NBA feels about. I mean, seriously, like, you know, and I'm not ripping the caller. He was a good caller, and, you know, he admitted it was a legit comparison. But he's really going to talk about Lowry faking stuff when you have Marcus Smart trying to draw a fake-ass offensive foul at the end of Game 6. When you have Marcus Smart literally flinging himself to the floor, it's the same thing. So if you think Lowry is a weasel and he's dirty and cheap and he acts, it's the exact same thing. The only difference is the guy you like is wearing your preferred laundry. It's exactly the same.
And you know who both of those guys ultimately are? It's like they're the sons of John Starks. That's who they really remind me of. So, like, you know, they're limited. They'll get hot. I mean, Marcus Smart, I mean, statistically was the Celtics' best three-point shooter in this series.
That
shouldn't happen. And I know that he gets hot. But he turned into Steph Curry this series, and they don't win without him. Great, but it should be Kemba Walker. It should be someone like Brown or Tatum. Another red flag quickly.
Yeah.
Jaylen Brown these last couple of games. Not great. So a little bit concerned there.
Well, he was 10-17. You know, he's not knocking down the outside shots, but you know what encouraged me? He got off to a really rough start. I think he missed his first 5 threes.
Yeah.
But he made his first 7 shots from inside of 3, and he changed his approach. So he only ended up taking 7 three-pointers, and I think 5 of them were in, like, the first, you know, like, quarter and a half of the game. He was smart enough to say, I don't have the three-pointer tonight, but I know I can get to the rim. And he ends up being plus 14, which was the highest on the Celtics, and dropping 21 points and shooting 10 of 17. I think that's a lesson for Jaylen Brown. He realized, three-pointer, that's not a club I have in my bag tonight, but I have other stuff, and I'm going to use that other stuff to help the team. I think, much like we talked about Tatum maturing with the passing, that's a maturation of Jaylen Brown not trying to do too much in a huge game and saying, I don't have this tonight, but I have all these other things and I can still be effective and efficient. So I was encouraged by it.
Okay. A lot to talk about with last night's game. Some red flags you might have heading into the series against the Miami Heat in the Eastern Conference Finals, which starts on Tuesday. Time TBD. We'll tell you why coming up next, along with more of your phone calls on last night's game. We're not waiting for noon for the Sports Hub Celtics show. Makes no sense. You had a Game 7 last night. It was a big win, so I know you want to talk about it. So we'll get to more of your calls next here on Gasper and Murray.
Gasper and Murray. Gasper and Murray. Gasper and Murray. Gasper and Murray. On 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Looking for an exciting place to spend your New England game day? You can't get it.
This is Gasper and Murray on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
We played a great, great, great Raptors team. We knew coming into this series that it was going to be a battle. And we knew that they weren't going to lay down, and neither were we. So we knew that it was going to be as tough as nails. And the team who wins, the toughest mentally and physically, is going to win. Tonight, that showed, that block. It's funny because as soon as Norman caught the ball, instantly I remember last game where that exact same play, he came at me full court and got the end one. In the same type of little standard where, you know, close game, and it put them up, I think, 3 or something like that. It was a tight game. When he caught the ball, in my mind, I was just telling myself, he has to dunk it. I'm not going to give no foul. I'm going to just meet him up top, see who wins that battle. And, you know, I bet on myself 110% of the time, and I'm first team on defense for a reason, and I believe in that wholeheartedly.
Marcus Smart, he's a beauty. God, this is such a terrible song.
Really?
One in a million girls.
This, to me, when I hear this song, I think like peak 80s.
Oh,
you know?
It really is.
It's like peak 1980s.
Yeah. There's a coked out guy in a Trans Am. You want to get in my car? You're one in a million girls. I love hot chicks. We'll go down to Revere Beach and have some fried clams.
And that guy, said guy is dressed like Don Johnson.
Of course. But that's Marcus Smart. Obviously, I think it's safe to say the biggest star of the night for the Celtics. Well, it's a coin flip between he and Tatum. But that transition block really helped the Celtics get out of that last night with a 92-87 win over the Toronto Raptors. They go on to face the Miami Heat in the Eastern Conference Finals with Game 1 coming up on Tuesday. Thank God for this scheduling because, you know, as we were wrapping up Felger and Maz yesterday, like, you know, Game 1's probably going to be Sunday, right? Because the way that these other games have been scheduled, like, there hasn't been that much time off in between these series. And it's like, oh, are we even going to be able to talk about this? What with the NFL starting up on Sunday?
Yeah.
Cam Newton's first start for the Patriots and Tom Brady's first start for the Bucks. It's like, oh, man, they might get buried here. So good on the NBA for pushing this a little bit. What time is the game going to start? Well, we don't know yet. If the Clippers and Nuggets force a Game 7, and keep your fingers crossed for the kid, Game 1 will tip off at 6:30. Which would mean no baseball reporters on Tuesday night. So keep your fingers crossed there. We need a Game 7 in that series. And if the Clippers wrap it up in Game 6, then it's, I believe, 8:30 is when that it's either 8 or 8:30 is when Game 1 will tip off. But let's keep our fingers crossed for Game 7. Nuggets and Clippers, because we'll get a 6:30 start on Tuesday.
You are the biggest Michael Porter Jr., Jamal Murray, Nikola Jokic fan going right now.
The end of that game was fun as hell, too.
That was a fun game.
Yeah. But your thoughts on last night's Game 7 and this upcoming series with the Miami Heat, 617-779-0985. We'll go to Elliot in Boston. You're next here on Gasper Murray. Hello.
You know, when we talk about Kyle Lowry, I think it's really easy to question if the Celtics had lost this series as to why Brad Stevens refused to, one, either double-team Kyle Lowry more when he got hot, or two, make it a point to have Kemba Walker being the one that guarded Kyle Lowry a lot of the times when you have Marcus Smart. I think for the Celtics to win this next series against the Heat, Brad Stevens is going to have to coach his way to the finals, given that the Heat have a similar team like yours, which is a lot of three-pointers, a lot of defense. And as you know, in this new NBA, sometimes it's not about the best team, but it's just a team that gets hot with three-pointers at the right time. So I think, you know, if Brad Stevens wants this moniker of being one of the best coaches in the NBA, this is a really make it or break it a series for Brad Stevens, because we can realistically start looking at this as more of what he has not done than what he has done in his tenure as Celtics coach.
Thanks, Elliot. Is that one of your second guesses in watching this series, and that Walker was on Lowry and you had Smart mostly on Van Vliet?
I mean, B-Rob can probably speak to this, too. I think the idea was to have Smart on Lowry, but the Celtics played a little zone. They played a lot of man-to-man. Yeah, I mean, the Raptors put them in actions that forced Kemba to be on Lowry. I thought one adjustment they made at least that I noticed last night, was when Gasol was on the floor, if it was Van Vliet or Lowry, out of the pick and rolls, they were just aggressively trapping the ball handler and basically leaving Gasol like all by himself. It's like, yeah, do whatever you want. We think you're a non-threat. And so they were aggressively doubling the ball handler out of the pick and rolls, and that seemed to force some of those 18 turnovers for the Raptors. I thought that was a very good adjustment that they made. Now, you couldn't do that as much when Ibaka was on the floor, because if you leave him open, he'll knock down threes. But when Marc Gasol was out there, they were doing that. I thought that was a very good adjustment that Brad Stevens made. But yeah, I think there's something to prove for Brad Stevens in this series. I mean, this is really the first series I can think of where they've won a series where the coaching matchup was close. And what I mean by that is, I feel like most of the series they've won, they had a clear advantage with Brad against the other coach. This, to me, is the first one I can think of where they end up winning the series, and it's like, well, you know, the coaching was probably dead even. I mean, Nick Nurse, NBA Coach of the Year, I thought Nurse did a good job for the most part. So I think that's another sign of growth for the Celtics and for Brad, is to be able to win a series where you don't automatically have the coaching advantage. You're not coaching the pants off of a Brett Brown.
Max in the truck, what did you make of the coaching that Brad Stevens did in the series?
Hey, what's up, guys? So I think you have to keep Marcus Smart in the starting lineup. And I think he's just been playing so well. And I hope Brad Stevens maybe takes out Kemba Walker and puts Gordon Hayward in there and has Marcus Smart, you know, run the point.
I think there's no way he's going to do that.
Slow down.
Yeah.
There's no way. I mean, I think it's Smart and Hayward, you know, that's where the swing spot is, but they're not going to take Kemba out of the starting line. That's just not going to happen.
We have Brian Robb, Boston Sports Journal, who's normally here producing this very show week in, week out, covers the Celtics for Boston Sports Journal. Some takeaways from last night and some of the stuff we're talking about with Brad Stevens. And did you have any questions about some of the adjustments he made and, you know, that you saw Kemba Walker on Kyle Lowry for, you know, the brunt of the series?
Yeah, I mean, that's just a tough spot for Kemba because you switch so much on the screens. Once the Raptors start hitting shots, then when you have to switch, then they're going to hunt Kemba. And that is going to be a mismatch at times. But to be honest, I agree with Chris's last point. Brad ultimately won the matchup in that series because the last chess move of the game, Grant Williams, last 8 minutes.
Yeah.
And he held up against Van Vliet with the game on the line, essentially, with 12 seconds there. So it was a battle. It was something where it was a coin flip series, and they needed him in that spot, and he came through.
How much will we see Gordon Hayward in this upcoming series, if at all? I mean, he has been out there practicing before these last couple of games. Doesn't sound like he's going to be leaving the bubble when the son is born. So credit to Penelope there. But when do we see him, and how much will he contribute?
I think my guess is we'll see him at some point next week. I'd be kind of surprised if we see him right in game one based off the fact that he, you know, 4 weeks would have been Sunday. And for an injury like this, that's like on the early side of returning. And they're going to need him in the series, but they don't necessarily want to use him right away. And then he has a setback or something like that. And then what are you going to get out of him? But I would want to maybe just bring him off the bench. I don't know what you guys think about that.
No, off the bench. That's what I want. Yeah, don't put him in the starting five immediately. I think you're asking for trouble.
Yeah, let him sort of work his way in. And I think he can help that bench unit with a little bit of spacing and scoring and ball handling and just sort of figure out what he has. The other my biggest concern with Hayward coming back with this injury is that, to use B-Rob's term, he could get hunted defensively. Miami could say, this guy can't move. He can't move laterally. He can't stay in front of anybody. When he's in the game, we're going to put him in matchups where he has to defend. That's my biggest concern with Hayward coming back. So I feel like you have to protect him there.
You're like, it's like when Homer Simpson sees the squirrel out the window. Like, ooh, squirrel. I see you look up, like, oh, college football.
Exactly, 100% yes. I'm like, oh, this is great. No, this is like Christmas for me. I mean, I know there were games last week, but not a lot of real games with real teams. And that BYU-Navy game ended up being such a blowout, it wasn't even enjoyable. But today, I'm disappointed this Virginia-Virginia Tech game is not happening because of a COVID spike at Virginia Tech. But yes, this is like Christmas Day for me.
I'll tell you, it is weird, though, with no ramp up. I felt the same way about the NFL, Chris. I don't know how you feel, but it's like you maybe look at your phone or you're flipping around and you're like, oh, wait, football's on?
It was a little strange.
Yeah, I think it started maybe a couple of weeks ago when there was a game on ESPN3 that started, I forget what teams it was, but one of them had Frank Gore Jr. on it, which made me feel 1,000 years old. But it's like, oh, this is really going to happen? Because so much of the talk throughout the country is like, there's not going to be football. How are you going to play football? No college football. So these, you know, there's going to be no Big Ten. These teams aren't going to be playing. But no, some are hammering through. And I say good. Like, they all should be playing. And hopefully we can all keep safe and, you know, and not get the COVID and all that kind of crap. But I do think that, you know, as long as you don't have fans there and you're doing the social distancing and doing the right things and the testing and all that crap, they should be playing, and thankfully that they are. In fact, we'll have Notre Dame later today. You can catch it right here.
Yeah, versus Duke.
That's right.
It should be an interesting game.
More of your Celtics phone calls coming up. We do have the Sports Hub Celtics show at noon, but, you know, we had to start talking about the game right off the rip here because it's a Game 7. The Celtics go on to the Eastern Conference Finals. It's a time to actually be happy in a time that doesn't allow for a lot of happiness. That said, I do want to touch on a couple of NFL-related things, Patriots-centric, of course, as they kick off the season tomorrow with a new quarterback for the first time in, like, 20 years. It's crazy. And it's Cam Newton, too, which is even crazier. We'll get to that next. Gasper and Murray.
Stay tuned for more Gasper and Murray on 98.5 The Sports Hub. You're listening to Gasper and Murray.
Fantastic chemistry.
98.5 The Sports Hub.
You know, you have to remember, I've been away from football really for a full year. 16 games. I missed the last games of 2018 and only played two games of 2019, so that's equivalent to 16 games. So I haven't really had this whole process for a long time now. So, you know, being around, taking notes, watching film, finding out about different players each and every day, locking in, you know, excited about the game plan and more excited about, you know, just trying to get in a routine with, you know, the newness of either the play calling, the coaches, and even the players.
It's new Patriots quarterback Cam Newton. Never not weird to say that. Speaking on, I think that was Thursday? It's Gasper Murray, 98.5 of Sports Hub. Ahead of tomorrow afternoon's season kickoff of the Patriots, 1 o'clock catch here, 98.5 of Sports Hub. Bob Sosi, Scott Zolak, of course, on the call as they'll be hosting the Miami Dolphins. Patriots quarterback Cam Newton. It's just a sentence. It's so 2020, Chris. I'll give him this, if nothing else. And I'm all right. So, and I've said this on Felger and Maz this week. I'm excited to watch Tom Brady, the greatest of all time. Everything I ever wanted to root for as a sports fan my entire life. My binky. I'm excited to watch him with all those weapons of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers to see what he looks like, because he looks reinvigorated. He looks like he's got a fire lit under his ass.
I can't wait.
Yeah, looks like he wants to.
I care more about the Bucs and Brady than I do the Patriots.
Same. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm curious, but the curiosity
for the
factor,
opener, I mean,
the curiosity factor with Cam Newton and the Patriots, that is through the roof, because I just want to see how it works. If nothing else, the one thing I do like from Cam Newton so far is he sounds like he's into it. Like, it sounds like, who knows? Like, if this thing looks like it's like, well, holy crap, Cam Newton is, you know, early 2018 Cam Newton again, and this thing looks completely different, and the offense looks better than it did, because it was a slog at times last year. It really was, especially on third down, third and, you know, five-ish. It's like, oh, God, they can't do anything, even with Brady at the helm. It'd be nice. It'd be a nice surprise. It's going to be so different and so weird that, like, there's a curiosity factor I just can't help have. I think that's about most people feel right now. Like, what's it going to look like with Cam Newton and the Patriots when they kick off tomorrow?
So let me ask you this question, because I have the curiosity factor too. And if you go back to even before they signed Cam Newton, you know, I was writing in March and April that Cam Newton was the guy they should go after.
Yeah.
So it ends up happening in late June. But is the curiosity factor, or are there separate curiosity factors here? I think that my number one curiosity factor for the Patriots is, what does it look like without Tom Brady? And I don't care who the quarterback is. I'm just curious, oh, my God, without Tom Brady. And then there's the, can Cam Newton come back curiosity factor? I think those two things are actually sort of separate. So which one of those to you is more intriguing? Just the fact that Brady's not there, what does it look like without Brady? Or is it, what, you know, how does Cam Newton look in this comeback attempt?
For me, it's actually the Cam Newton in the comeback attempt, because I liked him, like, when he was at his, you know, at his best, 2015. I think there are some shortcomings to his game a bit, but when he's healthy, he's a force. The guy's a former MVP. I do have some questions about the heart because of how that Super Bowl 50 played out against Denver and not jumping on that fumble, but I don't know. That dude's he's wildly talented. That's given, as long as he's healthy. And I'm curious to see how Josh McDaniels and Bill Belichick use him in this offense. The Brady thing, Chris, it, like, by the middle of last season, I wanted it to be over. I really did. Like, they had to go their separate ways. It was clear. Brady was as miserable as early as week three when they won in Buffalo. I always go to that one. Like, yeah. You're now 3-0.
You guys enjoy that riveting performance?
Yeah.
Is what he said.
He gets up there and act like someone shot his dog in front of him. It's like, yeah. Oh, God, this thing has to. Enough of this. Because I don't want to see him miserable, and I don't really want to start to dislike the team because he feels miserable being there.
He was even more miserable after they beat Philadelphia, by the way, because I was there. I was at that game.
Oh, as was
Philly. I. Yeah, that's right. He was even more. Oh, that's right. Yeah, we hung out. Sometimes I forget about that.
Yeah.
But in fact, yeah, you just like disappeared again. But he was even more miserable after that one, like visibly angry. Like, and fans couldn't see it. But when he left the press conference room, he walked by the media members. We're going back to the press room. He's going to the bus. And he just, I mean, he didn't look sad. He looked like mad, like angry, like, you know, sort of like. Like you, but when you put the onions in the ceiling at that job, I think he totally would have put onions in the ceiling of Belichick's office at that point.
It's for those that don't know the story, it was a drop ceiling at the now defunct WFNX. The kid here had been tapped out mentally, much like Tom Brady last year. So mad that I took onions out of my sandwich and put them in the drop ceiling. Why? Because I'm a mental patient. But that's how it goes sometimes. Sometimes you're done and you just are passive aggressive about it, like Brady had been for the last couple of years, and like, I want out. It's crazy that they actually won that Super Bowl in 2018 because he was acting that way that year, and you could tell he was frustrated. I hated how that whole feel of that. That's why even like last season I despised last season, and with that pumped up record that they had early,
12-4
on terrible teams. They weren't that good. They were exposed later in the season having the same record as the Dolphins. So I just wanted them to go their separate ways. Thankfully that they did. And now it's all new, Chris. Like, it's new uniforms, new quarterback. It's Cam Newton. Can he be reinvigorated? I want to just say it's the best thing that for me this season, the most interest that I have is who wins the divorce, right?
Like, exactly. You
know, and is it going to be Bill with Cam, and what kind of record can this team have, and are you going to defy expectations? Because I feel like for the most part, Chris, other than, you know, I have them at 9-7, still finding a way to win the division. It really has more to do with the default of the AFC East. I don't trust any of these other suck teams, and I know Buffalo. Like, you're going to put your money on Buffalo. Good luck with that. I'm curious for that, and I feel like there's no middle ground. People either think this team is still going to defy expectations and go 13-3, 12-4, 11-5, and be one of the forces in the AFC. I think Mike Florio, Pro Football Talk, has them fourth in the league.
Yeah, in his rankings, power rankings,
which is insane.
That's your boy.
Oh God,
holler at your boy, Murray.
Still blocked, thankfully, on Twitter, so I don't have to see his whining every single day. Or it's they think they're going to be the dregs. Jimmy Stewart, Felger and Mass producer, 3-13. I've seen Colin Cowherd thinks they're going to stink and be one of the five worst teams in the league. Again, I got them in the middle ground, but it's where are you with them? What do you think that Bill does with this team this year?
I think 10-6, playoff berth.
Yeah.
10-6, win the division.
So around that, that's where I'm at. Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's what I think. I mean, I think Bill will be able to squeeze the most out of the team. So I'm curious, to your point, I just want to see what it looks like. What we've always, Belichick and Brady, Belichick, who's more responsible? We've always had that is the enduring Boston sports barroom argument. And I just want to see what Belichick looks like for an entire season, an extended period of time without Brady. Now, you can make an argument about 2008 and what happened with Matt Castle. Outstanding coaching job. No question about that. And I covered that team. It looked pretty good. They went 11-5. But you also had a team that the year before had gone undefeated.
Yeah.
I think you had a team that had a lot more talent and certainly a lot more weapons offensively than this team does. And I said this yesterday on Felger and Mazz. I don't care who the quarterback is. I don't care if the quarterback is John Elway in his prime or Joe Montana or Pat Mahomes. It's going to be a challenge with the weapons, air quotes, that they have out there. I mean, I'm bummed that Gunnar Olszewski is not going to play. Like, I'm like sort of, you know, I don't want to say like suicide watch, but I am like really upset and dejected that he's not playing and very concerned that he's not going to play. That's where we're at.
Chris, I'm with you because who's their return man? When he got hurt last year and ended up on IR, that's why you ended up seeing Mohamed Sanu returning punts in the Eagles game and getting hurt.
Yes.
And that to me was, I thought that was one of the more negligent things that Bill Belichick did with that team last year.
Stupid
is that
decision.
He didn't have a plan on special teams in terms of a returner last year. He really didn't.
The spots that they designate for special teams.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And how seriously he takes special teams and how much money gets poured into special teams year in, year out, that he didn't really have a plan outside of Gunnar Olszewski at returner last year. And he goes down, it's like, throw Sanu in there, gets hurt, and he's never the same. And now he's been cut and you wasted a second round pick on him. That doesn't get talked about enough. So, while I do have him at 9-7, you have a 10-6. It has to do with that Belichick's the greatest coach. Because I'll tell you,
like Chris was just alluding to. You look at this roster and holy crap.
And this is why, so I, again, still think they win the division, but I could very easily be talked into this team stinking. And the thing, the column that particularly left me shook was, I think it came out last Saturday from Tom Curran, NBC okay. Sports Boston, where it was like, you know, it was basically the gist of it was like, are Patriots ready for this transformation and what this is now going to look like? And
yeah.
the way he broke it down, Chris, I finished the article. I was like, oh, they're going to stink. Like,
really?
Yeah. I mean, outside of Juwan Bentley, like the linebackers, if Bentley gets hurt, like who's going to run the defense in the middle of the defense? Like who's your green dot? Like, I don't know. Like the secondary's great. And I think you can make the argument that the secondary and the corners might be the best in the league,
yeah,
or at least top
secondary's
three.
Secondary's phenomenal.
And with those bad quarterbacks, that's why they're in the AFC East. That's why I still like them to win the division. But, man, that front seven, the middle of that defense, ugh. Wide receivers, oh, my God. Julian Edelman, knee issue already. N'Keal Harry, small B bust. Like, I don't know.
How close is N'Keal Harry to the, like, get off my team thing? Like, now, what would it take?
He's not one of the Cyrus Jones all-stars yet.
Okay.
But, man, you look at some of the wide receivers that were drafted after him.
Like, oh. A.J. Brown?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No,
Terry McLaurin? D.K. Metcalf?
Terry McLaurin going the fifth round, I believe that was.
I don't think it was that late.
Third? No, who was the fifth rounder went to the New York Giants?
Darius Slayton. You love that guy.
I do love
you
Darius Slayton.
You always bring up Darius Slayton. You love him. Debo Samuel?
Yeah. Oh, he's close, though. Man. So, again, trying to be optimistic, 9-7, can't wait to see what it looks like. But I'm not going to be shocked if they were real bad, too. Like, it's, look at that roster, Chris. Like, my God. And, just quickly, do you think if they do go bad, that pieces start getting traded off?
Oh, you know, I hadn't even thought about that. It would make some sense. Bill is cold-blooded like that, but I also question Bill's level of pride. I mean, that would sort of be an admission. That would be waving the white flag and saying, I didn't do a good job of building this team post-Tom Brady. And I'll say this, too. I think it's harder to do that this year because, remember, we have an expanded playoff field, finally. There are seven teams now in each conference that will make it, so I think that's going to keep some teams in it. By the way, I don't even think the NFL has released, you know, when the trade deadline is.
That's true, yeah.
It's normally somewhere in October, the end of October, but if you go on the NFL football operations site right now, they have the calendar for the year, and it just sort of stops at September. They're not giving you that trade deadline date.
Yeah, great coach. Team builder, recent years, not great. Let's specifically draft a kicker in the fifth round. One with maybe question in the draft. That's Rodrigo
Blankenship
out of Georgia, who is undrafted, ends up with the Colts. Wins that job.
Yeah.
Wins that job. But no, let's waste a pick on a fifth round flyer on a kicker, cut, practice squad, kicking it into the outhouses during the training camp.
Yeah, I got to be honest. I was at training camp, and I don't want to use hyperbole, but the word Scott Sisson crossed my mind this kid kick.
And here's the other real kick. Well, here's the kick in the Jimmy about this whole thing, too. If you look at that fifth round, we can agree they're weak at wide receiver, right?
There's
concerns at wide receiver. Did you know, listeners, audience, that seven wide receivers were taken after Justin Rohrwasser in the fifth round, and all seven of them, made their respective teams. All seven. Now, one is on IR, but all seven of them made their teams. Huh. Do you think you could maybe use another wide receiver? Do you think that's a weak position? I think we can all agree that's not a great spot for the Patriots in 2020 going into it. Could have used another one. Let's take a kicker instead. Oh, he stinks. Let's cut him. The drafting in recent years, Chris, not great. But we'll get to more of that later. It is time for the Sports Hub Celtics Show. We'll go back to them. Last night's Game 7 right after the Sports Hub headlines here.
It's playoff time in the NBA and NHL. Baseball's in full swing. And FanDuel is your place to bet on every game. Right now, brand new customers get $150 in bonus bets guaranteed. $150, win or lose. Bet on everything from slap shots to home runs to slam dunks, and all on an app that's safe, secure, and easy to use. I don't know what you're waiting for. Go to FanDuel.com/Hardy. Make your first bet an automatic win with FanDuel, America's number one sportsbook.
21 plus and present in Massachusetts. First online real money wager only. $10 first deposit required. Bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire 7 days after receipt. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Hope is here. Gambling helpline ma.org or call 800-327-5050 for 24/7 support. Play it smart from the start. GameSenseMA.com or call 1-800-GAM-1234.
Be honest, wouldn't you like to play more golf this year? As the State Golf Association for Massachusetts, Mass Golf is ready to help, and they want you to become a member. By joining, you'll automatically get a handicap index from the USGA, access to play exclusive private clubs through Mass Golf events, and a bundle of additional benefits. Best of all, it costs just $55 to join. Visit massgolf.org and make today a golf day.
Hey there, Boston. This is Noah Barney from North Attleboro. This year, I will be running not just one marathon, but I'm attempting to complete all six World Major Marathons. And I'm proud to run the 2024 Boston Marathon to support Boston Scores, an amazing nonprofit that uses soccer and poetry to inspire and empower youth. As a former collegiate soccer player, I am honored to be part of the Boston Scores Marathon team and support free after-school and summer learning programs for 1,500 local students each year. Learn more and support my run today at Boston Scores.org/Noah.